You're listening to Healthcare Now Radio. Stand by for This Just In, the latest in healthcare innovation and technology trends with your HIT advisor, Justin Barnes.
Thank you, everybody, and tuning back into us. And I certainly want to thank everybody from Business Radio X who's producing this live HIMSS 19 segment of This Just In Radio Show. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. Elise Sweeney Anthony.
Hello.
From the ONC.
Hello. Yes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. So you had an exciting couple days.
We've been pretty busy, A couple of rules came out, one from us, one from CMS.
Yes. So please, I would love for you to tell my audience about the new information, well, interoperability, information blocking, and...
patient access.
Yes.
Conditions of service, everything.
Wow. Yes.
So we've been pretty busy, as you know.
Yes.
We were working with developing a rule that really answered what Congress has asked us to do. Congress asked us to focus on the access, exchange, and use of electronic health information, thinking about how we update our certification program to really think about developers, not just from the technical capabilities that we usually include in our program, but also a broader perspective. There's more to interoperability than, and the success of interoperability than just the technical specifications. As Congress said, it's the business practices. It's gag clauses prohibit information from moving. It's screenshots that providers can't share that might help aid and address safety concern. It's information blocking and all the different potential actors who could be doing that, that impact the ability of patients to have the information they need to be part of their care continuum. So yes, we've been pretty busy putting these provisions in place.
I love it. So what's a screen share? I wasn't familiar with that piece. So you can't do a screen grab, a screen clip, or...
So we heard, and I think Congress heard a lot as well, about the fact that where providers would like to share some information related to screenshots and so forth, that they're not able to do that because some of the developer contracts don't allow that to happen.
Okay.
So what we've included is a provision saying that restricting communications, and screenshots are just one, that would not be allowed. Yeah. There are certain limitations that we've included, things like you can't change the screenshot that you take, things of that nature. I think it's an opportunity to have more transparency in what the technology is doing and how it's really aiding providers and the patients that they serve.
Excellent. So I guess one level deeper, and this is just a proposed rule that you put out there.
Yes.
But what are the goals? What are the four or five goals that you could see if we get the feedback and we incorporate the feedback and we work as a team and this is what we push out there. What do you hope at the end of all this?
Yeah, well, Dr. Rucker, who's the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, has really been focused on patient access. So bringing to life those pieces in this rule has been really critical. Mm. There's a number of places where we do that. We've heard from patients and other stakeholders that they would like an easier way to access their information, their electronic health information, whether it be from a provider or what have you. So we've included a provision that makes that easier and requires developer technology to have that in place for the providers they serve. We also include a provision in the information blocking section that says that where a patient is requesting electronic access to their electronic health information, that has to be at no cost. So patient access is one. I think another piece that we are looking at is bringing in APIs more into health IT space. There's been a lot of success with application programming interfaces in other sectors, and there's a lot of opportunities it can bring to the health IT and to the healthcare perspective. So what we've included are provisions that require application programming interfaces to be available to certified developers without special effort. And that, we think, allows an opportunity for not only innovation to happen amongst those vendors who might already be in this space, but also allowing new entrants to come into the space and provide more functionality for providers or patients.
That's fantastic. Dive a little bit into this one piece where the burden, because I remember I did see that, and then the actual infographic that Peter and you guys did put together, a fantastic infographic.
Thank you.
I'm a policy wonk. I do like to read policy. However, an infographic prepping for the show was very helpful. So thank you, Peter, for sending that along. But one thing that caught my eye, because I don't want people to use this as a crutch, I know you don't either, is like, well, if it's too much of a burden, then I'm just not going to, I don't have to do it. So it doesn't mean, I know we still, we're a long ways, we've got to get public comments and all that.
Right.
But talk about that a little bit. Like,
Yeah, I think Congress was very clear in what they asked HHS and ONC to do and to think about when it comes to health IT. And I think that's what we really wanted to put into place, are those requirements. A lot of those requirements are about technology being available without special effort, and that's the APIs. Mm-hmm. But APIs provide an opportunity to actually reduce the burden.
For sure.
And to find innovative ways to do things, basically providing a secure door to get the data that they need regarding patient and patient care and pulling that out in a safe and secure way. So what we're looking at is how that might aid the provider experience, because they would have more options in terms of potential applications that could be used on their mobile phone, for example. And then patients, the same thing.
Sure.
You know, there is a burden associated for patients trying to access their information sometimes, or having to access numerous portals to get the information they need.
Sure.
In this new environment, you can envision where application programming interfaces can help to pull that data down for the patient and bring it all together in one place so that the patient becomes a more integral and involved part of their care continuum.
It's awesome. I love it. So what advancement, at the end of all this, what advancement should we really see maybe come in a year from now when this is all through the processes and we get the final rule? What do you hope to see as an end goal for three or four things?
Right. So right now, obviously the proposed rule just went out.
Yep.
The first thing we're looking forward to is receiving comment.
So 60 days from what day? Do we know?
Not yet.
Yeah,
not
right,
yet.
Exactly. So it's not published yet.
Not published
yet. Right.
When it posts in the Federal Register,
yep,
the comment period would start. Yep. So we're looking forward to receiving those comments and seeing what comes in. We expect to hear from a number of different stakeholders. And
sure,
I always say, we want to hear not only what you don't like,
correct,
but tell us what you like, too.
That's very, let's repeat that again. Tell us what you like. We obviously will always hear what you don't like, but
absolutely,
tell us what you like.
Yes.
I agree. Yes.
Because it's important.
There's
a lot of specificity that we,
yes,
include in the rule so that we could really give folks and stakeholders an opportunity to tell us how this will affect them on the ground.
Yep.
So that's the first step.
Yep.
And then from there, once we have the comments in, we'll move towards the process of developing a final rule. And I think when the final rule is out, whenever that ends up being,
mm-hmm,
that what we hope to see is the progression of the industry to move towards implementing things like the application programming interfaces that are required for certified developers.
Right.
We look forward to a better understanding of why information blocking does not benefit the patient, does not benefit the provider, and how to not have that be part of your business practices. We look forward to seeing more communication happening about how EHR technology is working,
mm-hmm,
so that we can improve it and so that developers and providers can work together to determine how to have that technology work best for them and the practice that they're in.
Okay. Do we see more standards? I don't want to say more standards, but do we see us trying to focus on a certain number of standards around, like, say, an API interface, mm-hmm, or FHIR or something,
yeah,
like that? And that's what we hope to get from this?
I am glad you asked that question. So, in fact, what we have used in the past, in the 2015 edition, which we would be updating through this proposed and eventually, mm-hmm, final rule, that common clinical data set we're updating,
yep,
with what we're calling the USCDI, new,
yep,
acronym.
Yep.
But that stands for US Core Data for Interoperability. And it's a set of information that we think is critical for interoperability. So the set of information we really want to see move. And that can be expanded and adjusted over time. But one thing you would note that's included in there is now clinical notes. So that's something we're saying we think is critical to move as part of the interoperability spectrum. We are also identifying FHIR as the API standard that we think,
okay,
makes most sense. And we look forward to continuing to work with the FHIR community. We look,
sure,
forward to their comments on how what we seek to achieve and bring into place that Congress has asked us to do can be amplified or addressed through some of the FHIR resources. We even included an RFI in the rule, a request for information.
Yep.
I'll try to cut the,
yep,
acronyms.
Yep.
A request for information that focuses particularly on that. What version of FHIR makes the most sense? As well as how things like the opioid epidemic can be addressed through some of the technology that's out there, including FHIR and FHIR 4 even.
Sure. That's fantastic. So we think it'll probably hit the Federal Register. Do we know in probably 7 days from now, 5 days from now? We don't.
Soon. I think it will be coming out pretty soon. Right now it's in the Federal Register's hands,
yep,
and we're looking forward to publishing.
Okay. Excellent. I truly appreciate you joining the show.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Yeah. And See, we might have an extra. We have a minute more. If there's anything else that you want to touch on or you want to highlight.
I think the main thing that I would highlight is please comment. We always want to make sure that we're hearing from stakeholders.
Yes.
It helps us to develop policy that works, not just for the folks that what we understand to be the situation, but what's really happening on the ground. And the best way for us to do that is to get the comments in. I would encourage folks to visit healthit.gov/NPRM, which has all the information. And when it publishes in the Federal Register, please do comment. We'll include a template on our website to make it easy for you to comment.
Awesome.
Also helps us to review the comments.
Yes.
So that's a wonderful opportunity for you to engage. Comments can be 10 pages, 20 pages, or paragraphs.
Yep.
So there's a lot of flexibility in what you tell us and how you tell it to us.
Yeah, and then also, again, tell you what they like about the bill, the yes. regulation, proposed rule, I should say, and what they don't like.
Absolutely.
Comment on both sides of that, because I've seen that a lot.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Again, Elise, thank you so much. Truly appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your conference.
Thanks.
Excellent.
Are we live on air? Hi. I'm Edwin Miller.
From Allidaid?
From Allidaid, Chief Technology Officer, one of the co-founders of Allidaid. With the illustrious Farzad Mostashari and Matt Kendall.
Awesome. So, two phenomenal guys. And actually, Farzad's usually on my show. But,
He's been not at HIMSS for a couple of years.
I know.
So.
I know. This is great, though. I'm glad to have you. I'm glad to meet you in person. We've exchanged emails through the years, but
yeah,
I'm glad we actually meet in person.
Well, I think we grew up around the same times doing the same things.
We did.
So, I definitely know you by reputation.
Yeah. So we actually have a couple extra minutes. So I would love to learn about Allidaid even more, because I've never actually dove in too deep, and I'd love to know more about it in my audience if we've got time.
Allidaid is about helping independent physicians make the transition to value-based care, to put it succinctly.
Desperately needed.
Yeah, and participate and de-risk the move to value-based care, which is complex and fraught with a lot of change management and stuff like that. So we bring we're not really a tech vendor, but we have a technology component. We also have a lot of folks out in each market helping coach practices through the transition. So. Basically so they can take risk.
Yeah. And I love this. And I usually don't talk about products when we're on here, the show, but we got a couple extra minutes. But I also, this is so important for healthcare. Our physicians need desperate assistance in making this transition.
Absolutely.
So what are three things, before we dive into your thought leader questions, what are three things to say, hey, if you're an independent practice and you think this or you have this and this, you'd be a great candidate to call us? Or what, because a lot of people aren't ready. They probably aren't ready for you in some capacities, and some could be. What would be an ideal person to practice?
I think if you have a passion, look, a lot of it is around the mission, right?
Yes.
So if you are, and so the good thing about this is I've been in health IT for a long time. And I would go to practices and they would just be depressed, right? Or the docs would be.
Oh, yes.
And I really didn't have much.
61% burnout rate out there. I mean,
yeah, and so offering them more software really wasn't going to help them much.
Correct.
But in this world, we do have something to offer, and it's much more aligned with what they kind of want to practice medicine for. So it's taking holistic care of the patient. I think if you are used to seeing the patient holistically, focusing on patients that maybe aren't in front of you today, as well as the fee-for-service world of, running patients through your office today,
yep.
If you're doing things like PCMH or you care about quality measures and you're kind of already doing those things,
yep.
And you may not be paid for them, but you just kind of do them anyway, then guess what? You can get paid for them,
right.
And you can start to capture some of the value that you're creating by doing those things in the system.
Now, do you bring them into being, I think of the ACO model, but you're pre-ACO model, right?
Well, we operate ACOs. We actually
right.
create them
okay.
And then run them with our docs. So
right.
docs stay in their practice. We don't buy practices.
Right.
They just stay independent, but they sign a participation agreement with the ACO, and then they're in. So then they can participate in any gains that come through the ACO contracts.
Okay. So do you bring together a community then? If there's
yep.
going to be
yep.
25 doctors or 1,000 doctors or whatever
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, we're in about 30 states right now.
Excellent.
And growing rapidly. And so we go into a market and we find, usually some anchor tenants, as it were,
yep.
And then grow from there. These are usually thought leader docs, usually well-respected and that kind of thing.
Yep. No, I love it, and I love what you guys do. So now diving into some of the questions specifically, what are the healthcare trends or health IT trends that you're seeing out in the industry? And we just touched on some of it, but to kind of circle
yeah, I
back.
Think one is the move to value-based care clearly
yep.
is a trend that I'm paying attention to.
Yes.
I think the other thing is the emerging role of primary care as a under-leveraged part of that transition.
Totally agree.
And the quarterback, the role that they can play, they account for 4% of the cost, but yep. they influence, 85%.
Right.
So I guess the third thing you know, probably from a tech point of view, is probably the emergence of data fluidity, which we're seeing here, and you know, we heard this morning, and there's a very so PCPs can't manage, you know, patients who came out of the hospital if they don't know the patient was in the hospital. So the trends there certainly help our docs in that work.
Excellent. Yeah, and I completely agree. Actually, I'm chairman of a health organization in Georgia where we have the primary care is the quarterback. They're DPC doctors, but they are the quarterback. Yep. They practice on top of their licenses, and we've been able to drive down costs dramatically and yep. by putting the right ecosystem around them. So I completely agree. What are two or three best practices that you would offer to the community or you know doctors or health systems to successfully navigate you know these types of models?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of this is in a paper Farzad published, so it's not even proprietary to Aledade. But one thing is, you know, managing patient transitions of care.
Yes.
So that's a, you know, we predictably reduce readmissions in, you know, low two-digit numbers, but just by doing that. Another thing is, you know, there's all the complicated things of managing risk and things like that. I would say, you know, generally speaking, what is the workflow and how does the workflow need to change? What is the question you're trying to answer with data and analytics? You know, probably a couple of things I would focus on, but you know, it's managing high risk patients, knowing who your high risk patients are, knowing what's happening to them out in the community. Again, most docs have trouble seeing the 360 view of what's going on with their patients. And so, typically accessing that data either through an HIE or through payer claims data or something like that is critical to success in those models.
That's excellent. What we do a lot of here and now at HIMSS, but if thinking ahead a couple of years, so 3 years out, what should we be thinking about to either navigate or manage or to thrive?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think maybe a couple of things. One, data fluidity
yes.
is going to become more of a thing, and so being ready for that and not trying to play against it, right? So maybe the general way to say that is, there's a lot of healthcare models that I believe are on the wrong side of history. So trying to be on the right side of history. Let's just be honest, at 3 a.m. when you're laying awake, yep. what's the right side? Is it proprietary closed market power
right.
trying to enforce consolidation? Or is it, you know, being supportive of a community health model, being open with data,
mm-hmm.
helping the consumer drive, manage the system, understand cost transparency and things like that? So that is where, you know, I think it's shining a light on that.
Yep. No, that's fantastic. Actually, Anish was just up here talking about that exact very thing. Getting the payers to actually open up. And I think there's a new rule that he just, or they're talking about a new rule, not the information blocking rule. We'll be talking about that at 350 today. But he actually talked about there's a new rule that they're publishing for the payers to have to open up some of their, on the claims data and just
right.
and being incentivized to open that up.
I mean, I don't know how you would take a risk contract for cost and not have access to the cost information.
So true.
I mean, yeah, I'm kind of not really buzzword compliant.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's so many basic things that aren't there. Yeah.
I love it. So what do you hope to get out of the show, out of the conference for the rest of the year?
I really want to see what, you know, so I'm living in a boots on the ground world.
Yes.
So the future is great.
I do
but
as well.
I'm in the world of, like, you know, paper workflows and faxes.
Yeah.
And so I kind of am wondering what, you know, what EHR vendors are doing to embrace value-based care, which we've seen very little of so far. So there's a lot of, I'm probably looking for that. I'm just kind of seeing where the trends are going.
Yeah,
I'm trying to avoid as many buzzwords as I can.
I love it. Very, very smart. However, I got to say, people think that's a buzzword, but I'll be honest with you, every single
cool.
person that has sat in that seat has brought up AI and artificial intelligence and how they're implementing it today and how it's being used today. It's not just in the future.
It is real. It
care
is
delivery
real.
Today, how we're spotting, you know, we're looking for abnormalities that just aren't picked up by the human eye. And there's so many different pieces of our care strategy and research. And
I think it's so interesting what, you know, there's leaders and there's followers, right? And
mm-hmm.
and for us, like, we want to lead in value-based care and some of the things that we do,
yep.
but we're going to be followers in other things. We are not, you know, Amazon or, you know,
right.
as far as consumer empowerment,
mm-hmm.
things like that. So we are watching those things. Yeah. And it's absolutely true. I'm not trying to dismiss it. I think
it's, oh, no, I agree. Yeah.
I think it's real. I just think it gets caught up a little bit.
Well, it didn't. And actually, a lot of us were all saying that. We think, oh, well, there's a lot of hype here. But then literally, as every single guest, I asked every guest pretty much the same three questions because we are looking for trends. And now AI
yeah.
is just out there. And again, it was a buzzword a couple years ago, but now it's really
implemented. We are a heavily analytics-based business. We would not do anything without analyzing data, predictive models. But it's things I would call more predictive models, not pure, you know, AI. Maybe we could call it AI if
yeah.
it was marketing, but
right.
yeah.
Okay. So on the... What do you think of the new rule? Not to get, you know, political in any way, but what do you think about this new rule that was announced yesterday?
I think the rule couldn't be better for our docs and for community health in general.
Love it.
We've been happy to see it. I know this probably not a popular sentiment at a show filled with hospital CIOs, but, you know, the trends that we've seen this year or in 2018 from the government have all been in a positive direction in terms of, you know, opening gates for this.
Yep. No, I think it's overdue. I mean, to be honest, yeah. I mean, I think this is we're excited for certainly for it. Well, hey, Edwin,
thank you.
True pleasure, my friend. Glad
you
could be
thanks
here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You got it. Have a great rest of the show. So thank you very much. Chris Fowler, COO of CPSI and President CEO of TrueBridge. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Truly appreciate it. So first of all, before we dive into all the questions, what do you hope to accomplish over the next couple of days? What are your goals?
You know, part of what we're trying to do here at HIMSS is figure out what the latest trends are, making sure that from a product strategy standpoint that we've got our eye on the target and mm-hmm. that we're delivering for our customer base exactly what we need to be from an industry standpoint.
Okay. And so give us, we really can't do commercials, but I'd love 30 seconds because I actually don't know TrueBridge, so I'd love to know more personally about TrueBridge.
Okay, wonderful. So TrueBridge is a... Is a our services arm for CPSI. We focus on revenue cycle management, consulting, and a myriad of services. TrueBridge RCM is our clearinghouse product platform. We have we represent about 36% of CPSI's overall revenue, and have grown over the last 20 years, focused primarily on finding areas for our customer base where we can achieve an economy of scale and deliver a service for them or a solution for them that they can't quite do themselves. And have been doing that for the last 20 years and continue to look for those opportunities where we can help them be successful and continue to focus on patient care.
Excellent. You come from a great organization. I've known CPSI for 20 plus years. You guys are the greatest people. Everybody I've ever worked from your organization is really nice, really kind, and just great.
Well, thank you for saying that. You know, one of the great things about our company is...
You're also long-term employees. You all are long-term employees.
That's exactly where I was going. I'm one of the babies of the executive team, and I've been there 19 years.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's awesome. So going into some of the thought leader questions now, what healthcare or health IT trends are you seeing in the industry?
So kind of going back towards the TrueBridge side and where we focus on services, one of the things that we're really seeing impact our customers and across the industry is the transition to high deductible plans.
Yep.
And so how our hospitals are managing that portion of the AR. What are you doing to make sure that where patients may have had a $15 copay and a small deductible, now that's a larger lift for the patient.
Yep.
We're seeing that at our company. Our healthcare prices, our costs are going up. So how are our hospitals making sure that what used to be 5-7% of their cash collections now over 10%, how are they managing that and making sure that that money's not going out the door?
That's fantastic. No, a very good point. So what are two or three best practices that you can offer my audience on how to successfully navigate that?
So, you know, what we see is that typically patients want to pay their bills.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly about education. So what can you do on the front end from being able to educate your patient about their health plan so that when the time comes, when they're going to receive their bill, that there's not questions and there's not this feeling of that there's a gotcha on the backside.
Right.
That they understand that it's not the hospital, that it's their insurance, and it's just the change in the industry. And, you know, as we continue to see healthcare become a little more portable, a little more customer-driven, which wasn't the case 20 years ago and it wasn't the case 5 years ago.
Right.
You know, you go into the hospital and you get 100 tests run, and now, you know, that was all covered under your copay. Now there's an individual deductible for each one of those. And so making sure that patient's aware of exactly what their plan is so that they understand the financial applications or ramifications that are going to come out of that.
That's fantastic. So thinking out, and actually that... Just the thing about the high deductible health plans and navigating that, certainly from the revenue cycle management side, is very key. So, I mean, that's spot on. Something I've been working on for a couple of years personally as well. So, I love it. Thinking out, though, ahead, because HIMSS is a lot about the here and now and what we're trying to navigate in 19 and 20. But thinking out to 2022, what do you think, what do you see either within your customer base or even the industry that we should tell people? Keep your eye on that. This is going to be a growing, burgeoning area, something to navigate.
So... it kind of dovetails along the back of the high deductible plan, in that the patient's responsibility is going to continue to grow more and more in healthcare.
Yes, very true.
At the end of the day, over the last 5-7 years since meaningful use, all development has been so focused around provider engagement, provider adoption, where now we see that shift moving much towards the patient. So there's patient education, there is how do we devise technology and how do we develop technology to make it to where the patient can be more engaged and more a part of their process and to where that experience fits for them. So focusing on, you know, and there's a lot of buzzwords you can throw out mm-hmm. there, but at the end of the day, you know, it's transitioning from treating sick people to treating well people.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how do you do that? You don't do that in the hospital. So you leverage technology, you leverage your iPhone, you leverage your Apple Watch, and it's not a Steve Jobs commercial.
Right, yeah.
But all technologies sure. that you can that are portable now that we're seeing out there and being used, how do we get patients to be more engaged in their healthcare and make sure that they're committed to the well-being of themselves and also of the institution?
That's fantastic. I love it. I agree. Specifically, what steps are you guys taking to navigate that at CPSI and at TruBridge?
So a few years ago, we started along with Caravan Health, we initiated our own ACO.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we have 30 plus hospitals that are actually a part of that now, which, you know,
For the CPSI employees?
Our customers. So we have 33 hospitals that participate in an ACO or in ACOs we deliver along with Caravan Health.
Excellent.
So that was our first step, and we're in the process now of figuring out how we deliver or how we help deliver chronic care management for our hospitals. So bringing that in not just as software and not as some consultancy, but as a white glove service to where we're actually providing that for them. They can continue to stay focused on the things that they need to, and we can help migrate their patients more towards this healthy environment that we're looking to create.
That's fantastic. Chris, I truly appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you for joining the show.
Thank you very much.
And for everyone listening, thank you for joining us today, and please tune in weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HITAdvisor, and you use the hashtag ThisJustIn so you can respond to your comments from the show. In addition, all my content's always posted on my website at justinbarnes.com. Thanks, everyone. Have a terrific week.